Lie number one. The first presidents intended for the United States to be isolationist. In his farewell address, George Washington urged that the United States stay out of European affairs and make no permanent alliances, a principle that would be a hallmark of American foreign policy for a century and a half. James West Davidson and others, Nation of Nations. Thomas Jefferson, in his inaugural address of 1801, paraphrased the first principle of American foreign policy as peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none. John Macfarriger and others, Out of Many. Jefferson's federalism reflected his posture as a halfway pacifist in, but not of, the world of power politics. Peter S. Onuf, The Strongest Government on Earth, Jefferson's Republicanism, The Expansion of the Union, and the New Nation's Destiny, 2003. While few people have read much of what George Washington had to say, many readily cite his warning about avoiding entangling alliances as evidence that the United States should not be involved in foreign wars. As noted previously, the actual phrase, entangling alliances with none, was used by Thomas Jefferson, not George Washington, although Washington uttered similar sentiments in his famous farewell address. In neither case did the concept mean isolationism, or even an absence of foreign military operations, or even a complete refusal to engage in alliances. Nevertheless, it is frequently invoked by both modern leftists and radical libertarians as an excuse to avoid fighting foreign enemies unless the landing craft are actually dropping troops on the New Jersey shore. Not only did Washington's comments require context, but he personally had not followed his own advice on many occasions. Certainly, he did not oppose aggressive, even unilateral, military action. He enthusiastically led a small force to drive the French out of Fort Duquesne, but failed and had to surrender Fort Necessity, his own fortifications. Neither did his successors eschew foreign military action, including Thomas Jefferson, often held up as the epitome of a pacifist president, despite Reginald Stewart's description of him as a halfway pacifist. Understanding Washington requires that the phrases in the farewell address be placed in the context of the full address. Washington urged his countrymen to observe good faith and justice towards all nations, cultivate peace and harmony with all. Religion and morality enjoin this conduct. In achieving this good faith and justice, Washington said, nothing is more essential than that permanent, inveterate antipathies against particular nations and passionate attachments for others should be excluded, and that, in place of them, just and amicable feelings towards all should be cultivated. His concern was that, after an unfounded hatred, permanent and inveterate antipathies against particular nations would draw the country into war, contrary to the best calculations of policy. Sympathy for the favorite nation, facilitating the illusion of an imaginary common interest in cases where no real common interest exists, risks a participation in the quarrels and wars of the latter without adequate inducement or justification. Having spent the first three quarters of the address criticizing political parties, Washington warned that the avenues of foreign influence would shape American policy. Sounding much like a 20th-century multinational corporate leader, Washington said, "The great rule of conduct for us in regard to foreign nations is in extending our commercial relations to have with them as little political connection as possible." Europe, Washington warned, has a set of primary interests which to us have none, or a very remote relation. There were occasions on which alliances were acceptable. However, he urged Americans to steer clear of permanent alliances with any portion of the foreign world, so far, I mean, as we are now at liberty to do it. Then Washington clarified, "Let me not be understood as capable of patronizing infidelity to existing engagements." Existing treaties were to be honored, and future treaties for extraordinary emergencies might be necessary. Indeed, much of Washington's second administration